I'm a plumber by trade. It doesn't sound like much, but if you've ever worked this job, you know you're in a position of power. Fixing a toilet might not sound all too glamorous, but everyone who's ever had a broken toilet knows how inconvenient it is. How long can you stay in your house without a functioning bathroom? Anyway, I have quite the story to tell, and it starts somewhere far away from my ordinary workspace. There's an abandoned quarry just outside of town where kids who graduate have one final party before the summer. I say kids, but they're adults now, I guess. But it is a mindset thing. The whole quarry party is considered a harmless tradition, and most parents are willing to let their kids go. I mean, they went there themselves all those years ago. Who are they to tell their kids not to? The people of this town may be old-fashioned, but they're not hypocrites. Sure, the quarry is a bit messier nowadays, but all in all, isn't that bad. But that night, at this particular graduation party, things were worse than ever, and no one would know until it was too late. There were dark clouds gathering overhead, so most of the kids who wanted to take a dip had to hurry before the rain came. The first six to arrive threw themselves in. It was pitch black. Some complained about the water feeling weird, but it wasn't until the other kids pulled up with their cars that they noticed something wrong. There, illuminated by the headlights of a half dozen vehicles, the six kids who dove in stepped out of the water, covered from head to toe in a black, viscous liquid. Not oil, not algae, nothing like that. Just a thick surface liquid. And it burned them. One kid, Mary Donland, went blind. Two others ended up in the hospital with respiratory failure. The other three managed to get most of it washed off in time. The police were called in, and I've been told it was nothing short of a miracle that no one died that night. They never really managed to identify what kind of liquid had been poured into that quarry. All they found was that someone had dumped some kind of old appliance in it. A washing machine, I think. Over the next week, my crew were getting calls all over town. It started with a blind kid. I didn't take the call personally, but my co-worker, Jimenez, told me she was in a bad shape. She'd lost a lot of weight, and her hair had fallen out. Apparently, the only thing stopping her from going back to the intensive care unit was her parents and their power of prayer. Poor kid. She never stood a chance. When you lose so much hair that it clogs your shower drain, you need to see a doctor. There were other calls as well. The kids with respiratory failures had similar issues. One of them was starting to lose teeth. The other had trouble keeping liquids down. Even the kids who got the stuff off fast were having trouble. Nasty rashes and eczema. Seeing Rugboa with an enormous bald psoriasis spot on the back of his head was unreal. All of them were clogging or ruining the drains, one way or another. Hair mostly, but also this foul-smelling, hardened soil. Some of the kids were puking their guts out, and there was still this black stuff inside of them. You couldn't let it touch you. That stuff still burned. It also discolored things into this sickening blue shade. My guys stepped into at least four bathrooms with blue spotted tiles, despite the parents trying to tidy up. It was bad. Then the order came to drain the quarry. The entire quarry. It was an enormous undertaking, even though the site itself was neither deep nor big. The site was abandoned back in the 70s. Still, the mayor couldn't just sit this one out. We had a work cut out, and yet no one had any idea what the liquid actually was. I never touched the stuff myself, but I found Jimenez out by a truck one early morning. She was looking for something, and I came over to help. "What are we looking for?" I asked. It was still so early that the morning dew hadn't settled. Jimenez was scratching her head. "My kit," she said. "The entire thing, it's just gone. Bucket, tool belt, all of it. We had a break-in?" She shrugged. "No idea. There's just no... She stared at something off the side of the truck. I stepped sideways and followed her eyes. There were black handprints on the left side of the truck, and there were spots of goo covering the gravel path. Picking up a rag, Jimenez tried wiping it off. It left a blue handprint with enormous ink-like texture, looked just like the bathroom tiles I'd seen. "I'm calling the police," she said. As I stood there, watching the handprints, I noticed something. There was a clear pattern to it, to and from the back of the truck. The second set of prints, going away from the back, were slightly larger and slightly higher up, like someone taller and larger had made them. "Jimenez," I called, "do you have your work pants?" "At home," she called back. "They're in the dryer." "Did you get that ink stuff on them?" "Yeah," she responded. "Why?" I didn't like this, not one bit. Turns out, every single item that had been touched by this stuff had gone missing, Jimenez's work pants included. Later, Jimenez told me the police had gotten similar reports all over town. Lots of things that had even touched the stuff had gone missing. Entire sections of pipe, for example, from where it clogged, but also bathroom tiles, clothes, fabric, all kinds of items. I didn't like it. And what about the kids? I brought Jimenez along to Mary Donland, the kid who went blind. Her family was amongst the first to call us out about clogged drains, so I figured they were some of the people worst affected. Or, at the very least, they were among the first. Jimenez was skeptical, but that was a go-to response whenever she didn't understand what was going on. She didn't like to go into anything unprepared, but I didn't know how to tell her what I suspected. Instead, I just told her we were doing a follow-up on the water pressure. She didn't buy it, but knew better than to start asking questions. I think she'd noticed I was stressed out about the whole thing and just humoured me. As soon as the door opened, I could hear something awful from the top floor. Both parents were standing in the doorway, with their heads turned in a heartbeat. The pipes above were rattling, and it felt like the entire house was shaking. Something heavy fell over, and something ceramic shattered. "Mary?" the father called out as he ran up the stairs. "Mary, what happened?" We didn't even get the time to explain why we were there. We ran upstairs along with them. See, the thing is, the kids had been covered in that black stuff in the quarry. But it wasn't just their outside, but their insides as well. It got in their lungs, their bowels, their throats. And that stuff sticks. It colours things. Overnight, pretty much anything touched by it has been taken away. So, I didn't get a good look at her. She had been sitting on the toilet. She had taken a hold of the bathroom sink, but it didn't help much. It broke and laid shattered on the bathroom tiles. Mary Donland was lying right alongside the shards, with a black organic trail leading out from her stomach and into the toilet. Her eyes were already dead, staring straight ahead. Mouth wide open, her gums already drying. She died in a matter of seconds, her organs displaced and pulled out. Then came the screams from everyone but Mary. The police were busy that day, and Mary was just the first to go. Tongues were ripped out in the shower, skin was carved off. One kid got scalped in the bed, as their hair had turned blue from the goo a few days prior. Another had their teeth pulled out of their head while they were brushing their teeth. No witnesses seemed to make any sense. This time, there were only two survivors. The kid who got scalped, and another with a ruptured lung. It was a mess. Pretty much anything that had touched the black stuff vanished over the next few days. So, naturally, I wondered what happened to the equipment used to drain the quarry. By now, I needed answers, and none of my workers were allowed to go near the stuff until I could tell them it was safe. I headed up the water treatment plant with one of the supervisors, an old friend of mine. We headed inside and small-talked the entire way, until we could no longer ignore the obvious. "So, what did you do with it?" I asked. "The quarry water." "We tested it for acidity, and it was within parameters, so we just filtered it." "Filtered it?" I scoffed. "You don't mean..." "Yeah," he he nodded. It got filtered out with the rest of the main water supply. Are you... I collected my thoughts. That is insane. Look, there are no toxins in it. No bacteria. Chemically, it looks no different than old stale water. There's got to be more tests you can run. Look, we've checked, he insisted. Come see for yourself. I checked the pipes. I checked the filters. I checked the reports. On paper, there was nothing wrong with this stuff, except for a slightly elevated acidity. Still, I couldn't shake the feeling of something terrible happening. I need to see the reservoir. Of course, there wasn't much to see. Clear, fresh water. I couldn't imagine anything from Mary Donlan's bathroom ending up here. So, no matter how clean, there wasn't enough chemicals in the world to wash that image out of my mind. The only thing you'll notice is the elevated water levels, said the supervisor. That's only because of the added volume. It can't be that much, I added. More than you think. And you've checked out here, too. We have checked out here, too. We took a walk along the side of the reservoir, where I noticed something peculiar. On the western bank, there was a small patch of sunflowers planted the year prior. The soil around them had dried up, and some of their leaves had turned blue. Also, the soles of my shoes were leaving blue footprints. I'd stepped in something. We need a goddamn shovel. The topsoil was fine, but it was all just a cover. Underneath, inches away, the roots and worms were turning black and blue. The goo may have been filtered out, but it found its way back again. The implications were horrifying. We could have all drunk it, bathed in it. What if it only took a drop of the stuff to make us sick? I think it was some sort of microbe, something small enough to not be seen until there were too many in number. Something capable of surviving harsh environments, something we'd never seen. The supervisor was running off to call his superiors and alert everyone. I just sat down on the side of the western bank, watching the discolored soles of my shoes. My mind blanked. I must have sat there for hours. It wasn't until the sun started to set that I even noticed how much time had passed. As I got up to leave, I threw one last glance at the sunflower patch. A few of them had turned completely blue, while others were still struggling. I turned around to leave. Then, I tripped. I fell face forward, knocking all the air out of my lungs. Something had snagged around my feet, and I was still trying to understand what was happening. The sun was setting, casting long shadows all around me. Glancing behind me, I saw this long shadow of a man, but it was standing straight up, a vertical shade. That's when I realized it was no shadow. Reaching a height of just above 11 feet, this monstrosity was black as an oil spill. It held out a hand towards me, and two fingers reached out and spun themselves around my feet. The entire being was fluid, and shifted its weight back and forth, always in motion. The two fingers reached out at least 10 feet and were still as strong as industrial rubber. There was something solid inside the head, something resembling a skull, something with an open mouth, as if trying to scream. I barely had time to struggle. I dug my hands into the ground, but all it did was bloody my fingers. I screamed, but my lungs were still recovering from the fall. In the blink of an eye, I was being held upside down. I flailed around like a cat in a bag. Then, my shoes came off. I landed on my back, in perfect view of the fluid being. His fingers retracted, bringing the shoes into itself and absorbing them. They melted away. Then, as if nothing happened, the being sank back into the ground. It was all over in a couple of seconds. The only evidence of this being real was my very real lack of shoes. Barely even registering what happened, I just stood up and screamed. I screamed my throat out. The entire thing has been labelled a chemical spill. The reservoir has closed off, and an old pharmaceutical company was blamed for mishandling old inventory. Of course, Hatchett Pharmaceuticals haven't been a branch open in these parts since the turn of the millennium. They were just a convenient scapegoat. I moved out of town as soon as I could. I do not trust whatever weights in the water supply to just go away. I saw what it did to the soil. That thing will grow out of control, and this entire town is going to hell. Mark my words. There is so much wrong with this story. Like the government stepping in and closing the reservoir as if they knew what was going on. There's been reports of masked maniacs baptizing people in the now closed-off reservoir. Hell, there was even some guy who wanted to buy the wash machine from the quarry. Look, this thing's just... it's a powder keg. I can't believe they're covering it up. My therapist says I have to let it go, but I just don't know how. Dr. Jane insists that it'll be a journey, but that she's up for the task. I'm not so sure. Look, all I'm trying to say is, do your research. If you're moving into rural Minnesota, check the papers, drink bottled water for a few weeks, be careful, and check the area for blue flowers.